This week's presenting sponsor of the Infamous Podcast is once again the Ohio Toy and Comic Show. The Ohio Toy and Comic Show takes place on Sunday, July 23rd at the Fairborn Dayton Holiday Inn, right across the street from Wright State University. Doors open at 10 a.m. and admission is only $2 for adults. Kids 12 and under are free. They'll have artists, vendors, cosplayers, and hourly door prizes. Plus, you get a chance to meet me and Johnny at the Infamous Podcast table. We'll have shirts for sale and other great giveaways. Find out more information about the guest list and vendors and who all will be at the Ohio Toy and Comic Show at www.ohiotoyandcomicshow.com, or you can find them on Facebook. See you at the show. Welcome back to the Infamous Podcast. This is episode 99, Action Movie Monsters Aliens.
James Cameron's Aliens. Because if you do a Google search on aliens, it brings up everything.
Yeah. All right, so we're continuing our series in I think they're underrated. The 80s classic action monsters, right?
Yeah. Maybe not this one.
Well, I just think the genre as a whole.
Yeah.
It's kind of underrated, and, you know, it's been fun watching these two so far.
Yeah.
I'm looking forward to Predator and RoboCop.
Well, you've watched the special edition, right?
I did, which I'd never seen before.
So now things make sense that didn't make sense before.
Yeah, it still didn't change the way I felt about the movie, though. Yeah. But we'll get to that.
Well, you don't like it? I'll flip this table. I will flip this table.
It's my second favorite in the Alien movies. So I didn't. Yeah. Anyway. All right.
It ties for me.
Okay. So, but before we get to that, we have a couple bits of news to talk about.
Yeah.
So, man, you look really tired today.
I don't think I'm tired.
I don't know.
Maybe.
You had to work. I didn't. So. No.
True, yesterday was my day off, and I had worked every day since I got back from vacation.
But you did like 7 or 8 days in a row, right?
I did 6 days in
a row.
Okay.
Wow, that's a lot for you.
And then yesterday I actually slept later than I think I've slept in a long time.
Nice.
So, yeah.
All right, so the news bits is, the first thing is we have to talk about is Wonder Woman. Now, you
haven't
seen
it yet. She's a wonder,
that
Wonder Woman.
You didn't get
all
the
world is
yet.
Waiting for you,
and Johnny. Why are you spinning in a circle in my office?
I don't remember the rest of it.
Anyway, and then we're going to talk about the New Mutants movie.
They
cast a character. Anyway,
we watched that like
the whole series.
She got that a few years ago for Christmas.
Oh,
I think all three seasons.
Yeah.
And we watched them all.
Okay.
And they weren't bad. I mean, it's 70s TV. Like, it's watching $6 Million Man's kind of the same way where you're like, you know, it's one of those things where it's like, it's not like when I watched He-Man as a kid.
Right.
He-Man was awesome. He-Man now is like, ooh
ouch.
Watching Wonder Woman, it's like, it still holds up.
The stories are good. The thing, like, where
the music, the disco music with the World War II setting didn't work all the time.
Not
but
always.
You know.
But, well, I think where that and the Incredible Hulk both work still work, whereas I think Batman 66 doesn't, is they never went too far with like special effects or like action set pieces. It was always kind of just like these self-contained, like,
besides
scenes.
Her throwing people and stuff like that.
But,
I mean,
you know but I
mean, once in a while you'd get something really ridiculous. It's like I said, it's the same way with $6 Million Man, Bionic Woman.
Yeah.
When you watch them, you're like, yeah, these still hold up. Mm-hmm. But it's like, you know, yeah, you can modernize $6 Million Man and call it the $60 Million
Man. $60 Billion
Man. Yeah. I mean, but you could do it. But still hold true to the Steve Austin, you know, test pilot.
I mean, to be honest, the only thing that's really different from then and now is cell phones.
Yeah.
In those, you know, in those TV shows.
I mean, most ridiculous thing I think I remember from Wonder Woman is when it jumped from World War II to the 70s, mm-hmm. which was the last season.
Right.
And she wore some kind of roller rink looking type costume.
Yeah.
And then, like, you know, the Hulk, I remember the most ridiculous thing, and it's like a it's a GIF and it's a meme out there where he throws the bear.
Yeah.
But it's a guy in a bear costume. And it's the same with like $6 million Man. I mean, the Bigfoot that was a robot.
Yeah.
Spoilers for anybody who hasn't seen that episode.
You just spoiled a 40-year-old show, Johnny. How dare you? Anyway.
And the dog, the $6 million dog.
The $6 million dog.
Well, they,
he's the $3 million
she had,
dog.
She had because, one. She had the dog. Bionic Woman had the dog.
So, okay. So Wonder Woman's opening weekend
was it a wondrous.
It was actually, and it they're making a big deal because it outperformed Man of Steel and Iron Man.
Okay,
but.
Those are the first two movies in the cinematic universe of their.
And so that's what they're talking about. So, but the thing is if you look at the Man of Steel, I mean, it's garbage. It's the number two as far as the DC. It is pretty looking. Iron Man, if you adjust it for today's prices,
yeah,
beat it by like $10 or $15 million. Yeah. So, you know, it had closed out at just over $100 million domestically and then $223 million worldwide. Mm-hmm. But if I remember correctly, Guardians Volume 2 opened at $450 million worldwide.
They're not going to mention Guardians, too,
right?
Because, I mean, you know.
Well, but if you really want to take a look at this, right, Suicide Squad opened to 130-something million.
Yeah.
Deadpool was, you know, 140 million.
So did anybody put out a list of the current DC movies and the amount that
it's the number, I think it's the number 12 all-time comic book movie. I think it's behind Batman versus Superman and it's behind Suicide Squad. I know that.
Yeah.
So, and then it's obviously behind all three of the Batmans.
Oh, you're talking
of
the
Chris Nolan. Yeah. So, but my thing is
the Dark Knight trilogy
is and you know yeah.
If you didn't understand that was the Dark Knight trilogy.
Do you ever watch the epic rap battles of history on YouTube?
I've seen a few.
So
yeah.
The way they do it, that's how I hear Christian Bale now. I'm a Batman and I'm gonna. Anyway,
I always imagine it as talking through a toilet. You know how as a kid you would talk through a toilet paper tube, or a wrapping paper tube. That's what it sounds like that. Like, you know, here I'm gonna actually do like a tube on my hand.
So, just to put it in perspective for this year, so the $223 million makes it the 12th largest opening weekend for a comic book based movie. Period.
Okay,
right? Logan. Months ago,
yes.
In what, February?
March, February, something like that.
Opened at 247.
March.
Yeah.
It was March.
Okay. So, you know, it's the people are making a really big deal about how well this performed at the box office.
Is it? It's because it's Wonder Woman. Well, I mean, as much as, you know, and talking about the movie we're going to talk about today, goes along with the theme.
Mm-hmm.
The women empowerment thing isn't something that really has to be pushed anymore.
No.
Because women have power.
Yeah.
I mean,
women are awesome.
Last year, a woman ran for president.
Nearly
won. So it's like, you know, you don't have to shove that in everybody's face anymore. And I'm not sexist at all. I love women. Mm-hmm. I love what women do, you know.
You wouldn't be who you are without your woman.
But that's what I'm saying is like.
So, no, I know. So it's just like I sit here and I read this stuff and like I've been reading the reviews.
They're
and
making,
like,
to
watching
me,
these people go like crazy over it. Like I saw it, right?
It's making it more negative than positive because.
Yeah, you had the movie theater in Austin, Texas that did the
Alamo
Draft House.
Yeah.
Which, you know, honestly, I don't have a problem with it because they donated the money to like a women's shelter. But at the same time, like you get that whole like, oh, so my money's not good enough to give to a woman's shelter.
That's kind of negative in a different way.
Right.
And what I would have done, the men down there were probably more angry than anything.
It's Texas, so of course.
Right.
You know.
So what I would have done as a man down there is I would have went to that woman's shelter and donated on my own
without
having
it.
To go through the Alamo Draft House. Because that's just the Alamo Draft House getting a tax write-off off of everybody that came in to see a movie. Mm-hmm.
So here's my thought, though, is just cursory, no spoilers, not talking about the story or anything. It was okay.
It was okay. But you can say that about a lot of like superhero movies.
It was better than Man of Steel.
Okay.
It was better than Batman versus Superman.
I expected it to be.
I've since watched Suicide Squad a couple times since it came out last August.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't like it as much as Suicide Squad.
Okay.
So
I can understand why.
I loved Gal Gadot.
Mm-hmm.
Godot, however you say it.
I think it's Godot.
Godot. She's amazing.
Right.
And we talked about when they cast her. We were very open-minded with her because we're both fans of the Fast and Furious franchise. And to she was a known commodity.
She was one of the good things about those.
She was the only one of the only good things about number four.
Yeah.
Which is the worst of the entire series. You know,
the last one I got on Blu-ray. So yes, it was the last.
Chris Pine is a galactic treasure.
Yeah.
You know, I feel like they kind of wasted him.
Oh, okay.
Wow. He's amazing in it.
Yeah.
The supporting cast is really good. You know, Spud from Trainspotting was really good.
The bad guy. Yeah. Like one of the bad guys, right?
Okay. So, you know, you have Lupin from Harry Potter's in it.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Jorah Mormont's dad is in it. The Lord Commander of the Night's Watch.
Oh, okay.
The first Mormont. You know, Commander. Anyway, but
it has a lot of people in it that you recognize.
Well, it does.
It's the one thing that because a lot of people have seen it and asked me. I worked all weekend.
I know.
That's why I haven't seen it. I worked all weekend.
You'll get to it soon.
So I'll get to it probably this week at some point. People who I work with came up to me and asked me, "Did you see it yet?" "No, I haven't seen it yet. What did you think?" "Don't tell me anything about the movie, but what did you think?" One comparison that we talked about before, it's Captain America.
It's Captain America.
It's Captain America, the First Avenger. Somebody actually said that to me without me like saying, "Oh, what was it like?" They literally said it had a feel like the first Captain America movie.
I actually came out and said I liked it the first time I saw it when it was called Captain America, the First Avenger.
Right, yeah.
Now, the thing that bothers me most has
Instead
nothing to
her
do
fighting Nazis, she's fighting Ottomans, right?
Well, no, there's still Nazis.
Oh, huh.
But well, I mean, but yeah. Anyway, I mean that's a
proto-Nazis.
That's a distinction. That's you know. Yeah. Anyway, the color palette. Did Marvel copyright the daylight in superhero movies?
Maybe they did.
Because
is it another Dark and Dim movie
on Themyscira?
Yeah,
it's beautiful. It's amazing. It's Patty Jenkins' directorial eye at its best.
And what did she direct it before?
Monster. That's the only thing. The only big thing she's
Monster
done.
Monster with Charlize Theron. Okay. Yeah.
And then the minute they go, you know, through the shield,
yeah,
into the world of man, you don't see the sun again.
Wait a minute, Coulson was there too.
Yeah.
Oh, awesome.
Anyway, you know, Tahiti is a magical place.
Named Themyscira.
You don't see the sun again
to that man behind the curtain
for the entire movie.
Well, it's World War One. It's a bleak and dark time.
I get it. I think putting it in the '40s was a mistake.
The problem it wasn't the '40s.
Yeah, well, it's
it was World War One, wasn't it?
Yeah.
So it was the teens,
early '40s.
No, World War One took place in 1917.
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
Never mind.
Okay. You had me worried for a minute. I was like, wait a minute, in this DC universe, did World War One take place in the 1940s? So, that would explain a lot of darkness.
And so here's the other thing, is they should not have called it World War One because DC stuff doesn't happen in New York or Los Angeles. Right. It happens in Metropolis and Gotham and Coast City and Star City and Central City and Keystone City.
Even though those
other
cities do exist in
the
universe.
But like, you know, so they could have like really gotten away with it have been a war.
Well, I mean, they refer to it in a lot of the Golden Age books as the Great War.
The Great War, yeah. Exactly.
So they could have just called it the Great War, which is a name that it carries. So.
Now, having seen it, and we went to a Sunday matinee at 3:50, it was packed.
Mm-hmm.
I'm shocked that it wasn't a higher box office.
It's because it's a summer movie and they shove these things out one right after the other.
Yeah, but you know what? Transformers is going to come out in a little over a month, right? Uh-huh. it's going to make $500 million in the first 2 weeks it's out.
Why?
Well, because they make it for people in China now and not people in the U.S.
Why?
Well, because it's ridiculous popcorn bullcrap, but it's made for people in China. It will make its money in China. This movie did not make the money overseas.
Was it released overseas already? Okay.
So it's had a worldwide release.
But it's also the thing that you're not cutting to, that I'll cut to.
Yeah.
Because I don't care. I'm an asshole. So this movie was made for women.
I disagree. But, I haven't seen it.
But
I, that's the perception of it.
That's the perception of it by, and it's not by us. It's by everybody who's talking about it because they keep putting woman director, woman movie, woman. And it's like,
Female led, blah, blah, blah.
Be made for everybody?
Yeah.
I'm like, you know, one of my favorite female superheroes would be Wonder Woman. Mm-hmm. And it's not because she's Wonder Woman. It's because
she's
a
awesome.
Superhero.
Yeah.
Because in the end, she can carry Superman and Batman on her back. And, you know, be like, I got this.
Didn't you share the picture? Didn't you share a picture of that? Or somebody did?
Somebody did. I seen it. But I'm like, that's straight up like, you know, Wonder Woman can hold her own against
Superman. Jump over to the animated, back over to the animated movies, right? That Wonder Woman one that came out in like 2009.
Yeah.
It's in the top three.
It's one of your favorites.
It's in the top three of the animated movies. And I probably put it number two behind All-Star Superman.
Yeah.
And just in front of Superman versus the Elite.
Okay.
Because those, in my opinion, those are the three best animated movies they've done. Now, I love Batman. I love Nightwing.
Sure.
Those are my favorite. Like that part of the DC is my favorite. The Green Lantern movies were good. But those three are DC storytelling at its finest.
Mm-hmm.
And this didn't carry half the weight that carried.
Well,
as an animated movie,
you know, the Wonder Woman that was my favorite Wonder Woman besides Linda Carter was Justice
Adrian Pilecki.
No, Justice League.
Did you ever see that?
I did not. No, I never.
I'll have
to
track it down. I think I have it.
Yeah.
In the Justice League,
Wonder Woman
was
the
Wonder Woman.
I mean, she was the leader, even though she wasn't like taking.
I mean, she was the field commander. She was everything that Storm should have been in the X-Men animated cartoons and X-Men movies.
Yeah.
So, I don't know. I liked it. Okay.
Yeah.
I didn't love it.
Scale of 1 to 10?
8.
Okay. Well, see, that's not bad.
It's a B.
Yeah.
B minus.
Yeah.
You know, the kid loved it, you know.
And that's who I think it was made
but
for.
But she's the core demographic. Well, I mean, she's a little young for the core, demographic.
I think
but,
it was made because is it PG or PG-13?
It's PG-13.
It's PG-13, you know, but it
but
was
she was
made
not
for
the
girls.
She was not the youngest kid in that movie theater, so, which, whatever.
At least it wasn't Logan where they brought kids in there.
God, that made me mad. So, anyway. But yeah, so it did really well, you know. But, like, it did really well for DC movies.
That's not good.
The article that we linked to in the show notes from Newsarama mentions Doctor Strange, which only did about $85 million.
Yeah.
Like, Marvel considers that a bit of a flop.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, that's not an outrageous success. Now, the international box office picked
the
that way up.
The reason why they feel that's a flop is because Guardians of the Galaxy was such a success and nobody had ever heard of them before. Right. Doctor Strange wasn't a well-known character, and they were hoping for lightning in a bottle twice, and it's like, it's not going to happen because Doctor Strange is a unique character.
Like, you look at Ant-Man, right?
Yeah.
I think Ant-Man at, like, $75 million did more than what they expected from that. You know, because they had Peyton Reed, who's best known for directing Bring It On.
Yeah.
And Clueless.
Okay.
As the director of...
I thought Amy Heckerling
did. Oh, you're right. I'm sorry. Amy Heckerling did. I apologize. No, but Paul Rudd went.
Oh, you did the association.
Yeah,
thing.
My bad.
Oh.
But no, but for directing, Peyton Reed is most known for directing Bring It On, which is a fantastic movie.
Yeah, it's a good movie.
I love it. Yeah. The three of us will sit down and watch that all the time. And, you know, every once in a while, the wife and the kid will say something. I'll look at both of them and say, this is not a cheerocracy. This is a cheerdatership. Yeah. So very quotable. But yeah, I don't know. When you see this, we'll review it. We'll talk about it more. But we would have been remiss if we didn't talk about.
All the world is waiting for me to see this movie.
There are lots of people, definitely, for sure. So then the other little bit of news is actual Marvel casting news. So the New Mutants movie, which comes out next year, which I'm really excited for because I'm, again, of the two of us, I'm the New Mutants fan, and right. I've been rebuilding my New Mutants collection. They cast Danny Moonstar finally.
Yeah.
So Danny Moonstar, also known as Mirage.
Not the Transformer.
She was Mirage before the Transformer, I think.
When did New Mutants come out?
In the early 80s? Late 70s?
Oh, did it?
Yeah.
Was she called Mirage?
Yeah, she was Mirage from the beginning.
Maybe.
So they cast a relatively unknown, or I guess super unknown, a woman named Blue Hunt. She's very pretty, you know.
Oh, okay.
So Danny Moonstar, famously, is a Native American character.
Sure.
And she's very much tied to that. Her powers are tied to that. The reason her name is Mirage is because she can take your feelings and, like, essentially, like, mesmero and things like that, like, make you see certain things. The Demon Bear saga.
She brings mirages.
Exactly. Right. So, but she can make you feel things and that sort of stuff. But, you know, I'm excited by the casting because I was kind of concerned who they were going to get to play this. And, like,
is this tying into the X-Men?
I've seen where it says it is.
I really think they should.
They have to.
I feel like, and, you know, I haven't finished Legion yet, but I'm aware that, I'm aware that somebody shows up and that ties it to the movies, to the X-Men movies.
It's the best episode.
Yeah, I'm aware of that.
And the finale's
and
best.
And the Gifted, they mention Xavier and Magneto. Mm-hmm. So the Gifted is in that universe too. And I feel like it all should be in that universe. I don't think, like, you know, New Mutants should be a new universe. Ha! That's another Marvel thing.
Right.
But New Mutants shouldn't be taken out of that group.
Yeah.
It all should tie together in some weird way.
Yeah.
And that, so, you know.
I mean,
if wishful thinking is that X-23 would be in this movie. And it would be that girl that played her in Logan.
She would have to, like, go back in time.
Yeah.
You know, but...
Well, I mean, they can modernize all this stuff, yeah. So, you know.
So the cool thing about the way New Mutants is shaping up is it is a great young cast.
Yeah.
Right?
But see, that's what I mean. Like, with the way we know Logan was going on with mutants were not existing, this is a perfect way to reintroduce them.
Is this where you take the X-Men and you make them the new mutants?
The new mutants, and you introduce a new Xavier type character and all that. I mean
the New Mutants came about in the comics because they needed to have contemporaries for Kitty Pryde.
Sure.
Like, just plain and simple.
Yeah.
And, you know,
that would be the thing that would
Louise Simonson
and
that group who were responsible for that, the spinoff from, like, Chris Claremont and John Byrne.
Yeah.
You know, they created this vibrant, amazing book. I mean, I like,
yeah, you had to get the X-Men
set. I had to get the X-Men set because it had Warlock in it.
Right.
And, you know, he's sitting on my desk looking at us. He's judging. but no, you have...
I'll flip the table, Warlock.
You have Anya Taylor-Joy as Magic, which is Ileana Rasputin.
Who is Colossus's sister. But won't be in this, probably.
She is.
Oh.
Yeah, so Anya Taylor-Joy.
Deadpool showing up!
So you have Maisie Williams as Wolfsbane,
which is cool.
You have Henry Zaga as Sunspot, which he's
sounds familiar.
Teen Wolf, something like that.
Okay.
And then you have Charlie Heaton as Cannonball, and that's the one I have the issue with as far as casting goes.
Okay.
Because Sam Guthrie Cannonball, is one. He was portrayed great in the X-Men Evolution cartoon.
Okay.
But Sam Guthrie's like this good old boy from Kentucky.
Right.
And so Charlie Heaton is, he seems like a more British guy. So.
But they do the best Southern
accents.
They
do. So that's where, like, my only concern comes into play is, can he be like a good old boy? And is he going to be a good old boy? Because that's part of his charm. Right. Because the cool thing about Cannonball is when he's flying his powers are engaged, he's to quote nigh indestructible,
right?
And you know, he's completely out of control. So But no, I seeing this, like, this was the last piece that I really needed to like really solidify my excitement. Now I want to see a trailer.
So when's it due out?
It is, where is it? It's directed by Josh Boone and it is coming out this April 13th next year, 2018.
Damn, they're just now casting.
Yeah. So.
So they filmed everything else and
I don't know. So we'll see. Well, I mean, Maisie Williams wasn't available until not too long ago to record. So, Game of Thrones about a month away.
Yeah.
A month and 10 days.
Yep. All right.
Are I'm all caught
move
up
on to the,
yeah, let's move on
to the main subject.
To the main event of the evening. Let's get ready to face hug.
Okay.
All right, so we are talking about the 1986 classic,
yeah,
Aliens, directed by James Cameron, produced by his partner in crime, Gail-Ann Hurd, which I didn't realize she was the producer on it.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
So that made me happy because I do love her. And then he wrote the screenplay with some other people, and my webpage just decided to not cooperate. Let's see here. Anyway, we can talk more about that. It's a great cast.
Yes.
You have Sigourney Weaver back as Ripley. You have a very young Bill Paxton. You have Lance Hendrickson again. Lance Hendrickson.
Well, it's all
2 weeks
the
in a row.
Cameron.
Yeah,
class.
The Cameron. Crew.
Michael Biehn. Lance Hendrickson. Paul Reiser.
Mm-hmm.
Jeanette Goldstein.
Yep.
I'm trying to think of the guy who played most everybody in that movie you've seen in other things at this point.
Cameron's done. But everyone in this movie's been in something big at some point. So you had me watch the special edition.
Yes.
Which I hadn't watched before. I'd only seen the theatrical release. And I think it's fair to say I haven't watched this movie in probably 25 years.
I'm gonna flip this table.
all right. I love Alien.
Yeah.
And I love Alien for the way that story is told.
Have you ever seen that director's cut?
Yeah.
Yeah. That one's pretty sweet too.
It is. But what I like best about Alien, right, is it's just on the ship. It's, you know, there's not a lot of, you know, it's more, it's like Jaws, it's like Hitchcock, it's like, you know, you don't see a lot
Aliens
of the xenomorph.
Aliens the horror movie, right. Aliens is the action movie.
Right.
Right.
And I feel like with Aliens, Cameron especially just kind of ran up to, all right, we're going to do this awesome thing because it takes a lot of budget and time to make this awesome special effects thing happen.
Yeah.
And then we're going to spin our wheels, and then we're going to do something awesome again. And then we're going to spin our wheels, and then do something awesome again.
No.
It's, yeah.
That's just the way you feel about it.
It is. I'm not bashing the movie. I like it.
Right.
It's definitely the second best in the series, in my opinion, again.
Yeah.
Where for you, it's tied.
Yeah.
You probably lean a little more. And I know a lot of people consider
this an Alien Resurrection. This and Alien are.
A lot of
but
people
two
consider
different movies.
This. They are. They're two very, very different movies. So having just watched Terminator last week, which I hadn't seen probably in 5 years.
Right.
The similarities just kind of in the way he shot some of the.
He wrote Aliens while he was waiting for Arnold to finish Conan the Destroyer. Which
so,
they should have just stopped and did Terminator.
Stopped, burned the film, pretended like it never happened.
God.
So I get it.
Jeez. Yeah, this was an expensive movie. A very expensive movie.
It wasn't.
It was, but it wasn't.
Well, I guess looking at modern times.
Cameron,
it had a budget of $17 to $18 million.
Yeah.
And depending on the box office, like, because I know they've re-released it a couple times and they re-released the director's cut in theaters. Its box office was between 131 and 183, which in the 80s was huge.
Well, it's just Gail-Ann Hurd.
Yeah.
You know, being the producer that she is, knows how to budget things, plus they had doing special effects.
Yep.
I mean, that was all Stan Winston, who, you know, Cameron had worked with before, so it was one of those things where it was the buddy system.
Yeah. Oh, William Hope.
Yeah.
Who plays Boggs in Shawshank Redemption.
Boggs.
The leader of the sisters who's always trying to rape
Andy
Dufresne.
Oh, that's not William Hope. That's the other guy.
Oh, you're right. You're right.
Yeah. Yeah. That's who I was trying to remember his name. So.
I don't have his name written down.
Yeah.
Anyway, I'll look at him.
William Hope plays the commanding officer.
Right.
Of the group.
He is. The top.
The one I was talking about is Vasquez's partner who gets his face melted.
Oh, yeah.
That's the one who played Boggs in Shawshank.
Right.
He was also in Rush Hour and a few other things.
He's been in a ton of
stuff. I've met him.
He's awesome. He's
at one of the Horror Hounds.
He's always fun
reunion.
To see. Oh, really?
Yeah. So they had... Who was it? Frost, Dietrich, Vasquez,
okay,
Bishop, and whatever his name. I can't remember even his name. I can't remember the character's name. That's pretty bad. It's one of my favorite movies. I can't remember what kind of fan are you?
So the thing that I do like about this, where I think it really succeeded, was Paul Reiser's character.
Yeah.
Because he was essentially the company shill who was there, who didn't care about any of them, only cared about the equipment, the profit the company could make, and any mitigating any losses.
Yeah.
And at the same time, he wanted to bring one of the xenomorphs back to Earth.
Yeah, he kept Mark Ralston.
Yeah.
Drake.
Oh, yeah, Drake.
Yeah. It's funny, like, the names you see, like, Spunkmeyer, the guy who played Spunkmeyer, Daniel Cash, has been in a lot of stuff.
Yep.
And that he's mainly been in Canadian.
So the thing with Spunkmeyer, and I forget the pilot's name, what her name was.
Ferrero.
You know, she's like, he's sitting there trying to warn her that something's not right. And she's like, I don't care, just get up here. And then, done.
Yeah.
Right. You again, like, I think this is the common trope in the alien movies, right? You land a spaceship, you just leave it open for anything.
Yeah, I was like, that's the one where you're like, but the thing was, is they all were overconfident.
Yeah. Oh, they were so overconfident, you know.
It's a bug hunt. We're going on a bug hunt, guys.
Hoorah.
They said illegal alien and they thought it was you, Vasquez.
Bill Paxton was, man,
this movie is great for the one-liners and the jokes. I mean, I was saying last
Game
night
over,
how
man.
I didn't have to watch it. I watched it,
right.
But I didn't have to watch it.
Well,
and I was literally like downstairs and she was laying upstairs in bed and I was like, yeah, I said there's that one scene where Hudson goes, hey, Vasquez, you ever been mistaken for a man? And she turns around and goes, no, have you? I'm like, those lines I remember.
Right. Yeah, because you had posted that you were watching it, and then I just replied, me too.
Yeah. Well, and it was like with the special edition, there was more to it. Like, I remember seeing this. It came out in 86. I seen it in 87 on HBO.
Okay.
Like, the night it premiered on there, my mom and dad were like, yeah, you can watch it. My cousin and I, you know, he fell asleep.
So you were, what, 13? 14?
12.
87?
Yeah, 12. Summer of 87.
Okay, because I was 9 then. I was 9 going on 10.
I never had seen Alien.
Okay.
Wanted to see this because it looked cool. You know, it looked scary and it looked like it, you know, action movie. And they were like, yeah, you can watch it. And I watched it and I was like, yeah, this was awesome. And then like a few years later, there was all the talk about the director's cut.
Mm-hmm.
And I think I found it at a convention.
Wasn't
bootleg.
It kind of like mythological for a while?
Well,
too.
It was it was like...
Like,
you know,
the Richard Donner version of Superman 2 kind of thing.
It was one of those things where it was like rumors and that because they kept showing pictures of stuff that didn't happen.
Mm-hmm.
And eventually, I think I found it on bootleg at a convention.
Okay.
And got it and watched it. And I'm like, there was so much more story.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it explained Ripley's connection to Newt because Ripley had a daughter.
Right.
Which that scene had been cut out of Alien.
Mm-hmm.
Hudson's character makes more sense of why he's like, you know, game over, man, game over. Because he only had 17 days left and he was going to be out.
He
was going to be out of the Marines.
Yeah.
And it's like, you know... he literally in the director's cut says 17 days, man, 17 days. And it's like, okay, that makes a lot more sense mm-hmm. of what's going on there. And just little bits and pieces, them putting the sentry guns up and, like, you know, why they were able to survive for so long.
Right.
Because they would have been dead sooner if, you know.
Without that.
Yeah. And I'm like, you know, that kind of stuff. But then, like, on the, when I got the DVD box set, James Cameron does like an introduction mm-hmm. and says, the studio told me to do it because it was 237 minutes.
Yeah.
So it was almost 3 hours.
Yeah.
And he said that they wanted a shorter, faster version.
Sure.
So he just took out the stuff that wasn't as important.
Yeah.
But he put it back in because, you know, it was important to the story.
It really was.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, having seen the director's cut now.
Yeah.
Like, I definitely came away from it more invested, I guess.
Yeah.
In the movie as a whole. I definitely have a different view on the movie now.
It gives you a different view of Alien 3.
Yes.
Watching the director's cut gives you a different view of the original theatrical version of mm-hmm. Alien 3, which the director's cut's pretty similar. But,
right. But, like, you know, you lose...
Just story-wise, you...
So in Alien 3, right, you lose Hicks and Newt
off-screen,
essentially, which was stupid, you know?
And eventually you lose Bishop, too.
Yeah.
I mean, he dies.
I mean, so the cool thing about this was you get the... She's woken up. It's 57 years later.
Yeah.
She finds out that, you know, like, everything that was back on Earth that she cared about is gone, essentially.
Right, yeah.
And she's
her daughter had died, like, 3 or 4 years before she was found.
And you have these people... Excuse me. You have these people who she doesn't know.
Yeah.
She doesn't trust. They don't trust her. And...
Yeah, she blew up one of their ships.
Yeah.
She blew up, like, you know, a multi-billion-dollar ship.
Yeah. I did like when she was like, you know, we'll just nuke it. And he's like, it'll cost this much. And she just looks at him. She goes, build me.
Yeah. Why don't you just build me? Yeah.
But, I tell you what, too, is with this one, with Lance Hendrickson as Bishop, right? Yeah. I appreciate Michael Fassbender's David and Walter so much more now. Because I guess I just, you know, I mean, it's been so long since I've seen this.
Well, right. Yeah. It's the same as, like, when you watch all of the androids at this point, it's like you see where Fassbender picked up a lot of stuff.
Oh, yeah.
From everybody. Because, I mean, there's a little bit of Ash. There's a little bit of Bishop. There's a little bit of Call.
Yep.
I mean, you know, I mean, Winona Ryder as Call was probably one of the better things in Alien Resurrection.
Yeah.
And that, so.
Ron
Perlman's okay.
Yeah.
They just let him do whatever
he
wanted
to do. Was it Jake Busey? He was in that, right?
No.
No, it wasn't Jake Busey. It was someone like that, though. Yeah, I don't know, man.
Everybody's in Alien Resurrection.
Yeah, it seems like. All right, so the look of this movie.
Yeah.
Now, when they're in the set pieces, when they're on mm-hmm. the sets that they built.
Yeah, on the planet, on LV. 246.
Yeah, when they're on LV-246, when they're on the ship, that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
Looks amazing. Like, amazing.
Yep.
Right? But they're out, like, driving around their tank. They're flying around in their ships. Looks so dated.
The effects look dated, I mean, just because of 1986.
Well, I get that. But, like, you look at Terminator, which was 2 years earlier, and we talked last week about how those effects didn't look as dated. Like,
there's
the only thing that
sequences
the things that looked most dated in Terminator was the laser fire. We talked
truck.
About that last week.
When the truck explodes and that,
In this one, any time that something had to fly or drive or, like, you know, even the alien in a lot of ways, just kind of, to me, again, this is all my opinion. It just kind of, it looked and felt dated. The queen alien with her big giant head and her tiny little legs. It was like, do you even lift, bro? Someone's skipping leg day.
No, they made her look. They made her look like an insect.
Yeah.
I mean, because
yeah,
that's
definitely
what she
much
was
more
to
like
be
a
like
bug.
A queen.
Yeah.
You know, a queen insect. So, I mean, fair enough the way she looks and that, but it's like Stan Winston just went like balls out for these things. I mean, I read the thing on Terminator where the thing was so heavy that it took like 5 people to move the Terminator machine. And it's like, that's why he looks so stiff when mm-hmm. he's moving. And it's like, what, 3 years later, you got this queen alien who's moving like fast. Yeah. And you're like, you learned from your mistakes and fixed them on this movie. And then it's like, by the time they get to Terminator 2, it's like, you really learned from, you know, Aliens and Terminator what to do. And Predator. I mean, you know, Stan Winston literally has created almost all of these creatures.
I think one of the things that pulled me out, like where my my disbelief could no longer be suspended, was when the queen alien opened her mouth and her teeth were see-through.
Oh, the like glass looking thing.
It just, for whatever reason, it's just like, man, that's a practical effect. It looks great, but like I'm looking at a puppet.
Yeah, well, maybe a little bit.
I didn't feel like there was enough like acid dripping out of her, or like, you know, saliva or whatever it is. You know, it just like she had these glass teeth, but like everything else on her looked dry.
Yeah,
and you know,
but
again,
it's one of those things it's
30 years ago.
James Cameron's second movie.
Yeah,
Stan Winston's probably second or third movie. I mean, been the primary.
To be honest, I'm nitpicking more than anything.
Right. Yeah.
I'm not. You know, I'm like, I'm not looking for reasons to dislike
your
movie.
You're fanboying it too much.
Well, no. But like I fully admit I having seen the director's cut, I definitely have a higher opinion of the movie now than I did.
Yeah, on a story level, this movie is an equal to Alien. I mean, action-wise, it's an action movie, but on a story level of just the story, if you just read this as a book and read Alien as a book, they're like good stories and they're like equal on a story level. One scares the hell out of you and the other one you're like, This is fast paced. This is great. You know, this is, you know, like a comic book pretty much.
Right.
And it's like, I mean, literally they're two different stories, but they both are really good stories. Mm-hmm. And I mean, you know, and then you get down to it where you're going, Alien 3 is a really good story, but didn't need to go the way it went.
Right. Yeah, Alien 3 was just kind of a missed opportunity.
Well, it was a missed opportunity because you had a first-time director who had directed music videos, so it looks like a giant music video.
It does.
You got a bunch of bald-headed men running around on a prison planet, and I tell you what, the novelization of Alien 3 is better than the movie.
Now, Joss Whedon wrote the story?
Alien Resurrection.
I thought he wrote Alien 3.
I don't think he did, no. That's a little early. I don't even think that would have been like 91. I don't think that he had even like really been around yet.
Yeah, he'd been around.
What, working on Roseanne?
Yeah. Keep talking.
Yeah.
So I just pulled up the Wikipedia page to have a look.
I mean, I enjoy Alien 3 now. I didn't enjoy it when I seen it in the theater because I was such a fan of Aliens.
Yeah.
And by that time that I had seen it, I had seen Alien also and just didn't enjoy it in the theater the first time I seen it. Now I enjoy watching it because of the story and that, but I still think that killing Hicks, killing Newt was a mistake.
Mm-hmm.
Especially if you read the Dark Horse comics.
Right.
Like the first, I want to say, two or three miniseries that Dark Horse did after Aliens was a direct sequel to Aliens and had it take place, I think it was 10 years later.
Right.
Hicks was still around. Newt was still around. Ripley had disappeared. Mm-hmm. Bishop was still around. And it was literally, some of the ideas were used in Prometheus with the creators. Right. In that story, and it was just an interesting
the engineers
story. Yeah, they called them the engineers at that point.
So
I mean, you know, if you want to read those, I definitely recommend them. The trade paperbacks are out there, you can find them. And that, I mean, a lot of the Dark Horse, like Alien stuff, is really good reads. And that, there's some really cool stuff they do with them. Aliens Hive is a fun read because it's literally a civil war between two different factions of aliens, of the Cenobites, the Xenomorphs.
Yep.
Cenobites.
You're right. It was Resurrection. That was
Resurrection was Joss Whedon.
But Alien 3 was 92.
Yeah.
And then, or Alien Cubed, if you will.
Yeah.
Because the way they designed the logo. And then Alien Resurrection was 97.
Yeah.
And then you had Prometheus at 2012 and Alien Covenant at 2017,
well, don't forget,
obviously.
Alien versus Predator and Alien versus Predator Requiem.
Yeah, they didn't count those like
as alien movies.
As alien movies, yeah. But
they exist in their own universe.
What was one? Was it the second one that was in Colorado, or was the first one in Colorado?
Second one was.
Yeah, I like that one better.
Filmed in Canada, but it was Colorado. Yeah,
Requiem, right? That's the second one. Yeah, I like that one better than Alien versus Predator. Of them.
Well, they had cool elements, like story elements, but like, I mean, the cool thing with Alien Requiem was the Preda alien.
Mm-hmm.
That was like the only thing I thought that was really like good in that movie. And that, but like, you know, the story quality after three kind of just dropped like big time. Alien Resurrection is just a shit show mess. And that, I mean, it's all over the place.
It is.
Literally is all over the place. And, you know, Sigourney Weaver collected a big paycheck for that movie.
Yeah, that one had the biggest budget at $75 million.
Yeah, most of the budget went to Sigourney Weaver.
Probably. And it only made 161.
Yeah.
So
another one where it was like, grab a director who's hot at the moment.
Because
I think he had directed City of Children or something like that. A French French movie.
Oh, you're talking about Jean-Pierre
Jeunet.
Yeah.
Yeah. So he pulled people from...
Yeah, City of Lost Children.
City of Lost
and he directed Amelie after that. Right. So, I mean, he's got chops, but...
You know, he used actors that were in that movie that probably shouldn't have been in. I mean, Ron Perlman's okay in it, but still, Ron Perlman is playing a overplayed Hellboy.
He's playing a Ron Perlman character.
He hadn't even played Hellboy. Well, and that's the thing. Ron Perlman at that time, the only thing I knew him from was
Beauty and the Beast.
So it was like seeing him in this, it's like, it totally would make sense now because of who he's played, Hellboy and Clay
Morrow.
Yeah, it's like, it totally would make sense then, but it's like,
so,
you know, is that just who he was?
I kind of feel like, you know, your theory with the Teller children and Pacific Rim, that this guy is like Clay Morrow's descendant from the past.
Yeah,
so,
that would work too.
Sons of Anarchy is a prequel to Alien.
They cloned everybody in Alien Resurrection.
Right.
That was a clone of Clay Morrow.
Yeah. So just his hands worked.
Yeah. 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 It was a younger, stronger version of him, and they put a little bit of Alien in him, too.
Just to beef him up a bit.
Michael Wincott, and who else was in that? Winona Ryder. And then just like a lot of people, Dan Hedaya was in it.
Yep.
Dan Hedaya is not like a good general.
No.
In anything. I mean,
I liked him in... the one with Ewan McGregor and Cameron Diaz.
A Life Less Ordinary.
Yeah, yeah, I love him in that.
Well, and he's good as, like, you know, comedy stuff in that. But when you put him in action stuff, I don't know. He's in Commando. He plays the bad guy in Commando. Yeah. And it's just like, you know, whoa.
I can see him as, like, the retired general kind of a thing.
Yeah, like you know.
You know, but, like,
he'd be the one that would be flying up to Schwarzenegger's house and being like, such and such got assassinated, and we need you to come out of retirement.
But not...
But I have my daughter over here. And,
yeah. But not the guy who's, like, running the show.
No. Yeah. I don't know. I mean, you know, we both have seen Covenant at this point, right?
Mm-hmm.
So Covenant is this middle of a trilogy that's supposed to link to...
Alien.
The aliens.
Right.
The Ripley
right.
world. We'll call it the Ripley world.
So if I had to put these movies in order.
Yeah.
I would go Alien.
Okay.
I would go Aliens.
Okay.
I would go Covenant.
Okay.
I would go Prometheus.
All right.
And then probably Resurrection and then Alien 3.
Really?
And for the simple reason because, like,
flipping tables.
It kind of is flipping. It's like flipping a coin, right? Like,
no,
I can sit there. I can put Alien Resurrection on.
Yeah.
And, like, do work and clean the house and do that kind of stuff, right?
Well, then that's not even worth.
Right. But, like, Alien 3.
Yeah.
Like, I don't even want to put it on to do that.
No, you have to watch it.
Yeah, but like, I don't know.
That tells you that it's a better movie.
It is a better movie, but I don't want to watch it again.
Yeah, well, it's not a movie you have to keep going back and revisiting. No. But it's one of those ones.
I mean,
where
I think it's one if I revisit it every 30
years. If you rate it, then it's a better movie.
But like, if Alien Resurrection were on and there were like 40 minutes left and I'm flipping through channels, like I might stop.
No, that's the worst part of the movie.
Well, I get
the end is the worst part of the movie.
I get it, but I'm just saying I might stop and like
when the alien queen gives birth to the baby and the baby thinks that Sigourney Weaver's its grandmama,
mama.
Yeah, sorry, no.
Anyway, I don't know. Like I said, like Ron Perlman's in it. I love Winona Ryder. I'd probably just stop and take a look.
No.
But
no,
anyway,
it's a train wreck.
Yeah, it is.
Aliens and Alien Tie, Prometheus, Covenant, Alien 3, and then Resurrection.
Okay.
Prometheus and Covenant close to tie.
Yeah.
Just Prometheus is comparable to Alien in the way that Alien made you think.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you know, what's going on? What's this thing?
See,
why is it there?
I didn't have that reaction to Prometheus.
No?
I was just like,
Prometheus, it was like, what's going on?
Get to the point.
Well, no, that's the thing. The point is that, you know, it's a dangerous thing.
It is. Yeah. I don't know. I like between those two, I definitely like Covenant better. Because here's the thing is with Prometheus, had it not been for the little prologue movie with Dr. Swan. No, not Dr. Swan. What was her name?
Shaw?
Dr. Shaw. Thank you. Like with Shaw and David. The little...
you're talking about Covenant.
Yeah, I'm talking about Covenant.
Right.
Had they not released that, like I probably wouldn't have gone to see Covenant because that's how bad... Like that's how much I was like, yeah, I might be done with this franchise after Prometheus.
Yeah?
Now, that being said, Covenant did a really good job, even though I don't think it's great, and it had a lot of flaws, and it made humans really stupid, and there's just too many MacGuffins.
What the problem was is sending couples out.
Well, there's that. But I am excited to see how they wrap this up and tie it back into
the prediction main is that he'll create the queen, and he'll get ripped apart by it.
Yeah.
That won't be the first time that she ripped apart an android and alien.
That's how she knew.
Yeah. That, you know, she just, I think that it's going to be the matter of he's trying to kill what created him, and what he's going to create will kill him.
So I will say,
somebody I was talking to thinks Walter's still alive.
Yeah.
And that he's stuck on the planet.
Yeah. That was D. Griff.
It was David. Where I say the horseshoe ship on LV-246 will come into play.
Okay, so here's the thing though. When it comes to aliens, right?
Maybe that explains the clear teeth. That's a half android alien
Ooh,
queen.
Ooh, there you go.
Yeah.
Okay, so without aliens, right?
Yeah.
I don't think we ever get space above and beyond the way it worked. So you had the silicates
for the spacemen marines. Or?
Yeah. Yeah, but the Marines.
You can also
say
that without Starship Troopers, we wouldn't have, and not Starship Troopers, the movie, Starship Troopers, the book.
And I agree, but I think a lot of the, like, you had the silicates, right? They were the androids that had rebelled and that kind of stuff. And they're very reminiscent of Bishop and that kind of stuff, especially like their internal workings.
They literally, it felt like Wong and Morgan just took everything they liked about every movie and book they read, and threw it into one movie.
They're like, "Hey, we like this about the original Battlestar. We like this about
because
Star
I mean,
Wars,
if you got into the whole thing with the silicates, you could also talk about Blade Runner, the robots in Blade Runner, and all that type of stuff."
But I definitely like watching this. I see, the way this movie, Aliens in particular, right?
It birthed a new genre of types of movies,
and you have to respect that.
Yeah. So. I mean, I really don't think that you would. I think without Aliens, you wouldn't have got Predator.
Right.
I think the Predator was produced because of Aliens. Mm-hmm. It did come out like a year later.
Yeah.
And that, but I think that without Aliens, we wouldn't have got Predator.
And without Predator, we wouldn't have gotten Predator 2 with Danny Glover.
Yeah, getting too old for this shit. And Bill Paxton.
And Bill Paxton.
And Maria Conchita Alonso.
So, anyway, I think we're at a pretty good stopping point here. I think... All in, I'm glad we did. We're doing this.
Yeah.
I'm really glad I watched this movie because, like I said, it's been.
This is one that decades. I watch at least once or twice a year.
Yeah.
This is in my top 20. This is in my, like, of all the movies I've ever watched, of all the movies that I love, this is in my top 20.
I'd put this in my top 100.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. It's in my top 20.
Yeah.
Along with a lot of other weird movies.
That's cool. Weird movies are the best. Yeah. So.
And we'll be watching another one of my top 20s next week. Yeah.
So get your
actually,
mud.
All four of these probably could be in my top 20.
Cool.
Robocop might be in my top 30.
Okay. So get a bucket of mud ready. Hide your heat signature.
Yeah.
And next week we have Predator.
What the hell are you?
Get to the chopper.
Yeah.
All
go!
Right.
Go now!
All right. Well, we'll save all those for next week. All right, guys. We'll see you later.
Yeah, and this one would be like, hey, Brian, you ever been mistaken for a man?
Have you? We'll talk to you guys next week. Have a good one.
Later.
The Infamous Podcast is recorded in Kings Mills, Ohio, just north of Cincinnati. You can find new episodes every Friday on iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, our website, or anywhere podcasts are downloaded. This show is hosted by Johnny Podorf and me, Brian Tudor. Those amazing banners that go with our show notes, those are designed by Johnny, and the show is mixed and engineered by me. Our intro music is Moose from bensounds.com. You can find more information about the show online at infamouspodcast.com or follow us on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram at Infamous Podcast to stay up to date on the latest news about the show and find out what's going on in the world of comics, movies, TV, and more. We also have a Patreon page. Patreon.com/infamouspodcast. We have some great rewards for our patrons, and what we're looking for is help to grow the show to keep bringing you more of the content you want to hear. You can find Johnny on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram as @JohnnyPodorf, and I'm on most social networks as @BrianTudor. So whenever you're listening to us, have a great day, night, evening, weekend, whenever it is, and we'll see you next time. Thanks for listening. Later.